It's that well, most wonderful time of the day when we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, named now the Food Mensch because that's what we like. Hey, Arthur, how are you?
And I like it, too.
Okay.
I'm okay.
We are in agreement. We are in accord.
I hear, you know, I get irritated at the most stupid things. For instance, Bobby Flay, who has taken over the airwaves on those two food channels. You can't escape Guy Fieri or Bobby Flay. But Bobby Flay, I don't know on what show this was. I just was, you know, surfing stations, and I caught this. He was being asked questions. Does he believe this? Does he believe that? And one thing was, should you ever break pasta? And his answer was, no, never. Well, it's not true. And then the other one that stuck out to me was, do you ever combine fish and cheese? No, never. Well, that is a thing. You're not supposed to, I mean, the thing is, the advice is, not good advice, that you never combine fish or seafood with cheese. So I'm here to bust that myth. And where it started, who knows, really. But I'm going to speculate, because I knew the person, that Marcella Hazan is to blame for this myth. That you never combine cheese and seafood. She said that. But, of course, she came from, one, a seafood place. Cesiatica is the name of the town. It's on the coast of Emilia-Romagna, famous for Parmigiano Reggiano, not for really any cheese that goes with the seafood that they love on the coast over there, Rimini, Ravenna. Anyway... So it made sense to her. But I have to point out that Italians, in my long experience with Italians, are extremely regional and extremely provincial. Early in my career, I worked in a few restaurants in the north of Italy. And just to, you know, get a feel for the food, of course, I wasn't really working. I was just observing more. I was a journalist, I still am, and I remember going to this one restaurant kitchen and asking them how they prepared a dish that I had just learned in the other, the next door province, and they said, oh, we don't do it that way over here. Well, I'm talking about 20 kilometers away, not even 20 miles. Nearby, they were provincial enough to only want to do it their way and not the way they did it next door. So that's the way it was with the cheese in Marcella. In her territory, they never did put Parmigiano on a fish or seafood dish. But in other parts of Italy, they do put cheese, not necessarily Parmigiano, but could be. And truthfully, I have to laugh whenever I hear somebody saying, oh, you never do this, when in American cuisine, if I may call it that, we combine... we love cheese on everything. Of course, Americans, we overdo it. That's American, to overdo. And, for instance, here's one that I really don't like, but it's, I'm a minority here, is shrimp parmigiana. I mean, whoever heard of shrimp with a crust of mozzarella cheese in Italy? Nobody. Mozzarella is not one of the cheeses that you usually could combine with seafood, but in the south of Italy they have other cheeses that do go sometimes with seafood, not with a delicate white fleshed fish, but with stronger fish, even swordfish, and because they eat a lot of swordfish in the south, but they have cheeses that work. With some seafood. For instance, and I'm going to get to the American examples in a minute too, but in the South, they often put pecorino, which is sheep's milk cheese, which is salty and sharp. They often put that on seafood, not on your clam sauce, but on other things. And as far as American examples, here's the one of the moment in that this is a very trendy dish, lobster, macaroni, and cheese. I have had good lobster macaroni and cheese. I like the combination of macaroni and cheese a lot. And you throw in some lobster or even crab meat, and you've got, you know, a really luxurious dish. Because, of course, lobster is a luxury ingredient, is a luxury product. In fact, maybe the most luxurious lobster dish is one that has cheese, lobster thermidor. Did you ever eat a real lobster thermidor, Jill?
Yes, and lobster thermidor, my grandmother just used to adore it, but I just thought it was not. But
well, I mean, it depends. You know, it's made so many different ways. On the Queen Mary 2, where I was last summer, they had lobster thermidor in my dining room, and I ordered it once. I should have ordered it more. It was basically Mornay sauce, meaning a cheese sauce, with chunks of lobster put back in the shell, and then I think there was some breadcrumbs on top. The real dish is, I must say, real haute cuisine, high cuisine.
Cuisine.
And I had a friend, late friend, who used to say, well, haute cuisine means they cut it up for you. Because you're all dressed up in this fancy place, at an event or at a restaurant, and you don't want to get food on you, so they cut it all up for you. And that's what lobster thermidor is. You cook the lobster, you take it out of the shell, I mean entirely, not just the main piece of lobster in the belly, but the claw meat, and you cut up all the meat, you put it back in the lobster shell, and then it gets a sauce that is a reduction, I would say, of a fish stock. Now, it took you hours to make fish stock, so that right away that's haute cuisine. You need good fish stock, cream, and butter, and a little white wine. And you cook it all down until it's syrupy, sort of, and then you pour that over the lobster meat that's in the shell. And on top of that, you put a crust of, now, it depends on, if you're French, you're definitely going to use Gruyere, which makes a great cheese for lobster. If you make, by the way, a good macaroni and cheese, I would suggest you use a mixture of Gruyere and cheddar, and not a very strong cheddar. A good Gruyere can carry the day. But that's lobster thermidor. And then, you know, you just have to have a fork. You don't need to cut. You don't need to get sloppy, getting the meat out of the shell. True luxury. Anyway, so that's one. Another one with cheese and fish is Caesar salad, which is an American invention, Caesar salad. I'm not going to go into the whole history of Caesar salad, but the dressing has anchovies in it. And you toss the salad with the dressing that you made with the anchovies and Worcestershire and lemon juice and a little mustard and garlic, essential, all crushed together, and an oil. And then you top it with grated Parmesan cheese, Parmigiano. You know, by the way, the correct pronunciation is Parmigiano, and then the Reggiano. These are two places in Emilia-Romagna, near Bologna, Parma and Reggio Emilia. So it refers to Parma, Parmigiano, and Reggio Emilia, Reggiano of Reggio. They're very close towns. Well, I spent some time in Parma, and I remember I had a friend boy, my brain's not working. Anyway, it was like a 15-minute train ride, the next stop. In any case, that's what you eat. So there's a case of anchovies with cheese. Another case of anchovies with cheese, not an American thing, but a thing from Sicily, is a kind of, I have to say, pizza or flatbread called sfincione. And sfincione has both cheese and anchovies. You make the dough, which is like American Sicilian pizza dough, you know, a high light dough. In this case, it's lighter than what we get here in America for Sicilian pizza. It's almost cake-like because it has oil in it. And then you put down a layer of cheese called Caciocavallo Ragusano. I'll get to that in a minute. And then it gets a sauce, tomatoes and onion, and anchovies. And then it's topped with breadcrumbs and baked. I love this stuff. There used to be a pizzeria in my neighborhood here in Brooklyn that made it. They stopped making it because nobody knew what it was except me. Well, not me, but very few people. So I actually asked the owner, because he did it very well. And he sent me to several other places in Brooklyn that have it. None of them were any good. But I just discovered yet another place that is very good. But you got to call ahead and order it. In any case, it's called Crispy Pizza. It's in Diker Heights, which is a neighborhood in Brooklyn near Bay Ridge. Anyway, there they take the Caciocavallo Ragusano, real stuff. You can buy the real stuff, the Sicilian cow's milk cheese. And they sort of push it into the dough. And then they put on the sauce with the onions and anchovies, and then the breadcrumbs. So it's got a good base of cheese underneath a sauce with anchovies. So good. What else? I could go on and on.
What about lobster mac and cheese?
That's it. I mean, make a mac and cheese, however you like to make it. I like to make mac and cheese with a bechamel, meaning I started out with basically white sauce and then melt as much cheese into that as I have or want, a lot. And then the thing about lobster mac and cheese is you got to cook the lobster. And then take it out of the shell. So that's a nuisance. Most people don't want to do that. That's why the restaurants get a lot of money for it, too. It's labor-intensive. But, all you do is make mac and cheese and then put some lobster in it, maybe a breadcrumb topping. And that could have some cheese in it, too. The breadcrumbs mixed with grated cheese, either Gruyere or... By the way, the French call the same cheese as Gruyere, Comté. So I see a lot of Comté around, and the price is usually better than Gruyere. Although Gruyere is wonderful cheese, and it's easy to buy good Gruyere these days. And I think there's a company called La Gruyere, is the name of the pack, the brand that I buy. It's an actual brand. So sfincione is another example of, especially anchovies. I suppose anchovies. With pecorino, which is a salty cheese, go very well. But let's go back to this Caciocavallo. Caciocavallo means horse cheese. And it's called horse cheese. If you want to, I could tell you the dirty version. But the clean version is the cheeses are aged, or at least somewhat aged, slightly aged, or well aged, in pairs. And the pair of cheese together by a string are hung over what we would call a horse, like a carpenter's horse. So hence, horse cheese. However, in Sicily, there's a version of Caciocavallo. By the way, it's always a cow's milk cheese made by what's called the pasta filata method. Now, the most basic pasta filata, which means stringy paste, is mozzarella. I don't think I've ever seen mozzarella paired with seafood here in the U.S., of course, but not in Italy. However, the more aged versions of pasta filata, called provola, provolone, and caciocavallo, these cheeses are sometimes paired with seafood, and the pasta filata is they curdle the milk. The whey is drawn off, and the whey meaning the liquid part. The solid part, which is curdled because you put in some kind of curdling agent, rennet or whatever. Sometimes there are vegetable products that make the cheese curdle. And then you cut, in the case of most provola provolone, the curd is cut into tiny pieces. And then it is drained, salted, and aged. Now, cheese is one of those things that's sort of inexplicable. Like, you could do exactly the same thing with exactly the same milk, even, and have an end product that's different because of the environment that the cheese was made in and aged in, which is why caves are so important in cheese making, because they harbor the bacteria, the microorganisms, let's say, make it a little sounding a little better, that the cheese needs to develop its flavor. And, you know, it depends on where the cheese is made. The same product, as I say, can be made in two different places and have two different tastes altogether. So, hence, Caciocavallo Ragusano, which is made in Sicily, on the, by the way, the east coast of Sicily, because Ragusano refers to Ragusa, and also nearby Siracusa. These are the places that you get the real cheese. And by the way, unlike the picturesque Caciocavallo of southern Italy, the Sicilian Caciocavallo is made in rectangular slabs. You know, I mean, it could be a slicing cheese. You know, it could be put on the meat slicer and look like square slices of processed cheese, but it's not. And usually it's not put on the slicer, by the way. So, and you can buy Ragusano. In fact, I looked it up this morning that you can buy it online from somebody, and it's expensive, but here in Brooklyn I can buy it actually in a couple of markets. And it's different. But it is a cow's milk cheese. And it comes both sort of unaged, not really unaged, but lightly aged to well-aged. And when it's well-aged, it can be grated because it gets drier. What else? These are all called pasta filata. Pasta, the word in Italian, just means paste. It can refer to pastry, or it can refer to pasta, the dry wheat, or not dry necessarily, the wheat product, or it can refer to any paste. So pasta filata means stringy, because once the curd is made, then hot water is put on it, and the whole thing becomes a stringy mass. If it's aged, it becomes one of the aged ones. If it's fresh, it's mozzarella. Do you ever have very fresh mozzarella? I mean, made within hours of when you're eating it?
We used to.
We used to where?
In Millerton.
Where?
In Millerton, New York, there was wonderful, it was years and years ago.
Yeah, well, so many things were years and years ago. It's a nouveau world, as my grandmother never said. My grandmother was the one that I'm thinking of, Elsie. I always said she was more forward-thinking than my mother, who was her daughter. She was a very modern woman. When my grandfather died in his late 50s, she was also just in her late 50s, and she had never worked a day in her life. She decided she needed to get a job just to keep busy, and she taught herself how to type with one of those teach yourself how to type books, and my mother's high school typewriter. And then she got a job as sort of the house mother of a residence at Long Island University, which is Brooklyn. And when she was asked to type up something, she said, well, because she had this, you know, Barbra Streisand type manicure, these really long, pointy fingernails, not quite Cynthia Erivo, but they were for their day, they were remarkable. And she took those down to learn how to type and to type, and then she grew them back when she got the job and told her boss she needed somebody to type because she couldn't possibly type with those fingernails. So that was my grandfather. grandmother, who also, by the way, was did take down her nails once a year to make a massive number of crepes to make blintzes. Because the crepes had to be so thin that if you had long fingernails, you might be tearing them when you were handling them. So she did take the manicure down for that. Memories. I have no memories of my grandmother making any pasta with... Oh, you know what I wanted to say in regard to this cheese issue? There are some pastas that don't take cheese. People think, oh, you have pasta, you have to have cheese. Grated cheese, either pecorino, parmigiano, a mixture. Not true. For instance, for me, for my taste, if I make a dish with garlic and hot pepper, I don't really want cheese on it. I want to taste the garlic and hot pepper. And if I did want cheese, it would just be some very salty pecorino. There are dishes that I don't really want to have cheese. I make a lot of legumes with pasta, chickpeas in pasta, lentils in pasta, and other beans and pasta fagioli, pasta and beans. And most of those dishes, I do not want cheese. I might want a little extra olive oil, and I have really good oil these days, so I'm happy to use that. Or I might just want some hot pepper oil, which I make, basically just vegetable oil with hot peppers in it. If you heat it up a little bit, it gets strong. And, very little bit heating. Anyway, that's what I want on those dishes. I don't really want cheese. If you put cheese out, I probably wouldn't take it. But I certainly wouldn't be offended if somebody else wanted cheese. I make a lot of not lentils necessarily, but legumes and pasta. One of our favorite probably is lentils and pasta. We also adore chickpeas and pasta, which I usually make with rosemary and garlic. Mm. So that, to me, does not get cheese. It's a very simple dish. I don't even want to bother grating cheese for it. But really, it doesn't need cheese. It needs hot pepper, which I don't always get away with, but I try to. I live with somebody who is scared of hot pepper. And crab meat, there's another one that, people say, oh, you can't have cheese on anything with crab meat, but I disagree.
I have people who make crab dip all the time that have.
Yeah, exactly. And here's another one.
Cream
coquille Saint-Jacques.
Yeah.
That's, scallops.
Right.
Or coquille Saint-Jacques, but the usual preparation is in either in a cheese sauce or in a sauce and then topped with cheese and then put under the broiler. In fancy restaurants, they would put this in a scallop shell. And you can buy, by the way, clean, beautiful scallop shells online if you want to do that. So
when you started talking about it at the beginning, I was like, oh. But then I started thinking that, if nothing else, and maybe it's adulterated, but people have been actually mixing, certainly with shellfish, cheese.
Yeah. Americans, we do it.
Back when.
But I don't always agree with all that.
I'm there with you.
I'm an old guy. So I have to say, and I said this even when I was middle-aged, that a sign of a chef's maturity was his ability to edit. And as you get older, I could do a survey on this and prove it, but as the chefs get older, they use fewer ingredients. They sort of start to understand how to enhance flavors of one thing against another. But, American, we don't abide by much tradition here unless it's a family cultural tradition. And so we do anything, And that's why I always laugh when I hear people say you can't put cheese on seafood or fish, because we do anything here. That's my opinion.
Right. Now, edicts sometimes do not have a place, but tradition certainly does.
Well, there's a reason why it's tradition. And usually it's been proven to be helpful, true, whatever, positive thing. And that's why it gets continued. On the other hand, I have to say, this just made me think of this, is that years and years ago when I took over Hanukkah parties that my grandmother used to give, and I made our traditional family dish for Hanukkah, which is a kind of beef stew that you dunk your latkes into, I discovered that none of my cousins liked it and didn't eat it.
I think you mentioned that, actually. It's like,
I've mentioned that
all
before,
that work.
It sticks with me. Because it sticks with me. I wonder if they would like it better now. I don't know. I doubt it. They were always picky, even as kids. My sister and I ate almost anything.
Oh, that's great. No, I had the picky eater appellation. And my paternal, my father's mother, you know, really had no... She had one girl and three boys, and she had no patience really for girls, and but my brother, well, he was the le petit prince at the time, long short. She would take us out to eat, and she would come home, bring us home, and say, he ate everything, he ate everything, nothing. Vegetable, something. There's something wrong with her. And then that would stay that was the way it was. So I became the picky one.
Okay. And you know, talking about lobster thermidor makes me want to make a lobster thermidor, but then the idea of having to pick out the lobster doesn't. And I don't even know a restaurant that serves it. So that's out of the question. Everybody have a great week. Stay warm.
This has been, and we thank you for it, another edition of Arthur Schwartz, newly the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.